to me, it sounds like the solution really is having empathy for migrant women.
Absolutely.
I think it sounds like potentially we have more empathy for some people than others. Like, we value and care about and are, you know, curious and reflective about some people's feelings more than we are about other people's feelings.
Absolutely. Empathy and acceptance. Acceptance that some migrant mothers may do things differently to other migrant mothers, or that racialized migrant mothers, you know, go about caregiving in a very different way to white citizen mothers, if that makes sense. So I think it's about understanding that the standard that we have set as a society for parenting, for mothers, for individuals, you know, for employees, it's not attainable because we haven't taken time and consideration to think about all of the complexities that then feed into everyone's daily lives. And this is not an unattainable goal, you know? It's all about the people that you have in the room who make decisions, who design programs, services, supports, to their policies, to then say, hey, are we representing the people that we want to help or the people that live in our society? And how can we do that?
I think it's really interesting that you bring up acceptance there, because obviously the flip side of acceptance is judgment. And I think that is a great segue to thinking about how emotions contribute significantly to maintaining and upholding patriarchy. Because I think sometimes patriarchy can seem like this very elusive, vague concept in the way that it's used kind of in everyday discussions. But I think that as a good feminist, I've thought a bit about how is it that patriarchy has such a strong hold on people, even though it causes so much suffering. And I think for me, it seems like one of the strongest mechanisms for perpetuating and maintaining patriarchy is actually constant kind of emotional conditioning that's going on. So for instance, talking about, to take it back to our earlier conversation about things like Christmas organizing, and you were talking a bit about how if that goes well, you get a pat on the head. But I think that also suggests another motivation for that behavior, which is women trying to avoid the shame and also the judgment and criticism and potentially anger of other people around them. And I think I don't know if people necessarily focus enough on how that individual experience of difficult emotions, for instance, shame, is actually a really powerful way of maintaining patriarchal behaviors. And I think it would be great to hear your thoughts on how, particularly considering the way that emotions are not necessarily viewed as a particularly important, relevant, or kind of powerful force compared to things like rational thinking and pragmatism. Do you have any thoughts on how emotion plays a role in shaping the lives of women, migrant women in particular, and upholds these types of norms and standards?
Absolutely. So we'll work backwards with my answer, first beginning with the patriarchy. The patriarchy is all about control, right? It tells you what you can do, who you can do it with. It limits you, controls you, constrains you. This concept of control then feeds into the practice of emotional conditioning that you mentioned, which is a great term, by the way. I might actually adopt that if you don't mind me.
No worries.
this concept of emotional conditioning, where that is practiced day in, day out for centuries to control women from displaying much emotion, from operating within this small window of allowance to gain results and to help create a society that feeds into, again, like that capitalistic structure. I'll go on to your second question, which was emotional regulation and how it plays a role in controlling women. I think emotion, thank you for clarifying that first and foremost. I think emotion is this really subtle way that the patriarchy enforces control, because emotions aren't tangible. You can't see it. You can't point it out. You can't touch it. It's a very internal process. So the patriarchy exerts control via emotion by, as you said, by really tying negative emotions such as shame or guilt is a big one, to women doing the wrong thing, and that wrong thing is considered anything that does not serve the greater goal of productivity and making the world go round. And that means them then deprioritizing their own emotions to look after everybody else, because their greater purpose is feeding out into this greater society that we all operate within. So if you look at the concept of caregiving, and or let's even go further, narrow down into that, into parenting, women's emotions take a backseat because their priority is looking after their kids, for example. And their sole focus goes into the emotional regulation and development of their children. But nobody really stops to ask them how they're feeling in the meantime, because that doesn't matter in like the greater production line that leads to the creation of functioning adults. But this then feeds into an even greater problem of those functioning adults not having the emotional bandwidth to think about anything other than themselves. And if those functioning adults are born as a woman, or who decide that they are a woman, they are therefore then nurtured from a very young age to feed further into the negligence of their own emotions. And this then feeds into this greater cycle of taking women's emotions and putting them in a little box at the back of our minds, or not in our minds at all, that then collects dust because we don't think about it at all. And that's how, like, the patriarchy slips into how we live our lives, through these invisible structures and decision makers, and how it's been perpetuated over years and years and years to then become the norm. Does that make sense?
That makes perfect sense. I think it would actually be really valuable to have, not just have this kind of broad intellectualized scholarly engagement with these topics, but think of it about, like, how does this actually affect real people? And you're a real person, Mira.
Thank you. Thank you for reminding me that I'm a real person. I think I needed that today. I feel like it's so rare that migrant women get to talk about themselves. So this is a really nice opportunity to do that. Yeah, so I'm from Sri Lanka originally. And honestly, moving here as an adult and operating within the system as an adult migrant is crazy. It was exhausting. I had no idea what I was doing. And there were so many invisible and unspoken rules that we have to follow and that I felt obliged to consider, not just as a migrant woman, but as a migrant woman of color and a South Asian, you know, woman. And considering my own migration experience in moving here as a student and then working here and now doing my PhD here, it really got me thinking of, oh my God, if this is so hard for me, how hard was it for my mom? Because my mom was a South Asian migrant mother herself, and we moved around to so many different countries, and she had two kids on her, and she was my age. Like, you know, she was, I think, 26 by the time she had two kids, which is crazy. She was in countries that didn't speak English. She had to learn new languages. She was doing a lot of it by herself because my dad was busy working to provide for our family, you know, financially. And it really got me thinking of, wow, I never actually had the opportunity to ask her what that experience was like. And to be honest, I don't think I've ever heard any migrant mother talk about their experience in a new country, or, you know, a couple of years post-settlement in a new country. And how sad is that? Because if we live in such a fast-paced, fast-globalizing world where migration is a given to most people at any point in their lives, whether it's rural to urban or interstate or internationally, migrant parents, particularly migrant mothers, are key in building the societies that are going to feed into what our future looks like. Let's stop and think about what we can do to best provide and support migrant mothers, because their safety, security, happiness, health, functioning is what is critical to then us improving as a society and building up as a world more generally. So what can we do to help them? Amplify their voices and pay attention to what they have to say and share in our empathy for their circumstances and acceptance for their differences in way of life, but also to celebrate that I think that people often get caught up in the negativity surrounding identities that are often marginalized, like racialized identities or individuals and migrant individuals and those who have varying abilities or disabilities, etc. But there's so much wonder and education that the rest of us can learn from people of different cultural backgrounds and from different identity backgrounds. And I think starting at the point of caregiver, as in mother or migrant mother or racialized migrant mother, we can really break those cycles of assumption and societal practice to then just be better and to do better.